Hey guys, welcome back to the Morning Update podcast. Today we decided that we'll talk about the new budget framework that just passed the Senate and also the House, and that there's some really interesting stuff in that, so we'll get to it. There's some new news with the military, a lot of recruitment stuff going on. Commander has been fired from her post, and there's some in immigration news and semi-positive and a little bit negative economic news. So we'll get into it all. To start with the new budget framework, this one's a bit interesting. So if you remember the last one, the first time the House tried passing a budget under Trump was in February, and it didn't go through the Senate. So what the Senate did is they basically revived that bill, changed it a little bit in some of their committees, and then passed it. And when you do that, you're basically reconciling it so you don't need 60 votes, you just need 50. And they have 50 votes. So they passed it, and now the House passed it. What's going to happen is the committees are then going to figure out what they want in the bill, and they're going to pass it, and then it's going to be a whole process beyond that. But so let's talk a little bit about the basics of the bill and what it does for our economy and our spending. We'll start with probably the one thing everyone wants to hear. It would make Trump's tax cuts permanent. And I'm very happy with that. I think, John, you're happy with that too. I don't know.
Yeah. Or I don't know if it'd make it permanent, but at least it would make it not stand out anymore that according to the calculus done for deciding what the budget looks like, it wouldn't be regarded as like a tax cut anymore. It'd just be regarded as like this is our tax structure. So we wouldn't have to ha always hear Democrats say how much, oh, this is going to make us lose this much money. No, it's just the amount of money the government has.
Yeah, I think that's pretty common sense. So I guess if you get a super majority of Democrats in the House, Senate, and presidency, they might be dumb enough to undo this, but it's a good start. They've also got so let me compare this to the first budget bill. The first budget bill was sort of like the huge thing, lower spending by like $5 trillion, I think it was, over 10 years. This one has a minimum requirement of 4 billion. Not trillion, just billion with a B. And that sounds super underwhelming. But I mean, these are politicians saying this, so take their word for with, a grain of salt. Both Mike Johnson and John Thune have come out and publicly said that they will cut spending by way more than that. They just needed this to get it passed. I think that's a fair argument too, but that's the basics of the budget bill. It does. Here's the one thing I'm excited about. I'm a huge fan of the military. I don't know why, I just like it. But many commanders and generals in the military have been complaining that they don't actually have a budget. The past 2 years, we've been passing continuing resolution bills. And, they get the job done when we're busy with politicking and whatnot. But this has been going on for 2 to 3 years now. And they need an actual bill that will give them an actual increase in spending because they need to pay for a new fighter jet. They need to pay for new ships to deter China.
Which
It
aren't cheap.
it's getting, I'm sure they're happy. It was getting to the point where they were getting kind of desperate.
I mean, just on the topic of the military seeming desperate, me and all my friends have all gotten in the last few days messages from recruiters, and just like they must be sending out a mass messaging campaign because, from what I've heard, except for the Marines, every branch is still having problems getting as many people as they want. I've heard it's gotten better since Trump was elected, but it's still not like they still have recruiting issues.
Yeah, I've been getting those emails too. It's been kind of funny because, maybe 10 years ago I would have been dreaming about joining the army, but not anymore. I'm going to college and they're emailing my college email, and you don't really think of college students as like the key target group
Oh.
for these type of emails.
Though I guess they are the right age.
Yeah, that, I mean, Yeah. You just don't see college students actually sign up very often, but
No.
who knows? Maybe it's working for them.
So it looks like the new budget, it doesn't change a ton in that, like, it's putting in cuts to spending, but not steep cuts. Like, we're still going to be running a deficit.
Yeah. I don't know how Trump plans on getting rid of the deficit, but it doesn't actually get rid of it. It doesn't even begin to it. It's yeah.
And I think we've talked about that before. Like, if you've made up your mind to not touch, like, you're not going to raise taxes, you're not going to touch Social Security or Medicare, like, I think DOGE has definitely been finding billions of dollars of waste, fraud, and abuse, but there's only so much waste, fraud, and abuse in the government. Eventually, you're going to run into these harder things.
Yeah, and I keep seeing these. They're kind of like scare tactics by Democrats. They'll reach out to the newspapers like Associated Press or The Guardian from the United Kingdom, and they'll talk about how Republicans, and they'll even say DOGE is doing this, but that we're gonna like get rid of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security in order to cut the deficit. And there probably is some truth to that, but I do think it's a scare tactic still.
I mean, I kind of wish there was more truth to that, in that, like, yeah, we got to do something about Social Security, or else our generation isn't even going to be able to use it. There's going
Yeah.
to be no money left in it.
That's like the biggest critique of Social Security I have. It's like every paycheck we get is like what, 50 to 100 bucks just taken from you. And it's like, I'm never gonna see that again.
It's
But
just a massive wealth transfer to, I mean, maybe that's the responsibility of younger people, but it'd be nice to know we'd get paid back someday.
yeah. And just think about like the role of Social Security. The role is to like take money from you and give it back to you when you're old, right?
Yeah.
Why can't an investment company do that for you?
And I think I've heard that was a debate originally, when Social Security was first put in place, of like, why not trust people to manage their own finances? And the government was basically like, no, people are too dumb to do that.
Yeah.
Which
Yeah.
maybe there's some truth to, but it doesn't feel very free, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I think if you just make it sort of like a cultural norm to, I don't know, pay 200 bucks a month to an investment company that will give you it back at like 50 or something like that, I think it'll be a pretty popular thing. Much more popular than Social Security, which I'll probably never see in my life. But yeah, I do wish there was more truth to the scare tactics, but I still think it's scare tactics because Republicans tend to like to talk about issues and do the very bare minimum to get reelected.
Yeah, there's some budget hawks out there, but, like, especially when you see, like, this bill only got passed by two votes, I think, in the House of Representatives. Like, there's just no room for a stronger stance.
Right, and that was because two Republicans voted with Democrats. That
Man,
never
which ship
happens.
can
That
we
would
run
like.
back down?
Sorry, what was that?
Which two?
I don't remember. I think it was Massey and some person from Indiana, a female representative from Indiana.
Huh.
But Massey votes
Nasty
against
is
everything.
because, yeah, it wasn't radical enough.
Yeah. If there is a spending bill, it doesn't matter if it's only a dollar, Massey will vote against it. So
Which,
that's.
yeah, maybe that's not a very good sport thing to do, but I mean, it's cool that he's sticking to his guns.
At least he's consistent, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know who the person from Indiana is. Maybe she's like a new representative and she's also basically a Thomas Massey. I don't know.
Yeah,
But
Southern Indiana. Or I don't know.
yeah,
I'm thinking
probably.
Southern Illinois being really deep red. I don't know what Indiana looks like.
I think Indiana's largely deep red until you get to Indianapolis, and then it's pretty much like Des Moines.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, looking to tariffs, because I know we talked about that last week, and this week, at the beginning, it was looking pretty bad. We had 3 days in a row in which the stock market dropped, at least the Dow Jones dropped, 1,500 points, which kind of got all the way to the floor of what we said in the last episode was like, this is when you should start worrying. But then there was a little bit of a rebound in the day in which there was no news. And maybe if there was more of a rebound, I'm just guessing Trump wouldn't have changed his mind. But I think it was on what, Thursday or Wednesday, there was a big scare with the bond market. And it looked like the US dollar was slipping a lot more than could have been expected. There was a big sell-off. And then Trump kind of came out and said, like, hey, people are getting scared. People are getting yippy and all that. So we're going to cancel all of the tariffs, except for we're going to raise tariffs even higher on China. Which, I mean, maybe it's a bad look to keep flip-flopping, but I think that's a much better system than what we had before.
Yeah, if you want to like think back to the tariffs for a little bit when they first got introduced, like the day of, or no, sorry, the day after, the opening day after, they dropped thousands of points. Then the day after that, there was a rumor started by Walter Bloomberg on X. It's an anonymous account, that's not his real name. And he posted that Trump was planning on pausing the tariffs for 90 days, and then Trump came out and said that that's false. So like in between those two announcements, the stocks sort of like shot up. Then Trump said it's false, and they shot back down. And then the next day, they shot down again. And the day after that, Trump decided to pause tariffs for 90 days, which he said he wasn't going to do. And then stocks shot back up.
And it's amazing how, like, before I read the news, I was just looking at the market, just being stunned at, like, what happened? Why is why is the stock market going up 2,500 points within an hour? Which I think is the largest single increase in the stock market ever for the Dow.
Yeah, I think so. And that happened with the S&P and NASDAQ as well. They both had near record highs, or not highs, but like
Yeah.
increases.
And the market's still really volatile, but it's at least today it's been trending up. And I think there's reason, just my guess, not that I'm a market analyst at all. It's going as long as Trump doesn't go out and say, like, all right, tariffs are back on and all of that stuff. I think it might stabilize and get back up to like 42,000, like they'll slowly rise again, but it's going to take a while to reach the heights of what it was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, 100%, what, 120% tariffs on China when China is our biggest trading partner and like 30% of China's exports go to us, that will have a huge effect. I think it's necessary because China's our biggest rival. They're not a good faith competitor. And, like, if there's anybody that we should be tariffing, it's going to be China. But effectively banning trade with China is going to, like, iPhones are going to become, I don't know, 20, 30% more expensive. Some cheap plastic holiday decorations might become 40, 50% more expensive.
Right. Actually, so there is a section in Walmart that I saw the other day, and it was filled with beach toys, and the whole little section said Made in America.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And they were not super expensive, they were about as cheap as you'd expect them to be.
All right, well maybe. I mean, That's an optimist way to look at it, especially because so many of the goods we've gotten from China, a reason that we rely so much on them is that they had previously shoved other businesses out of the market just by undercutting them and then raised prices. So there is
Right.
reason to believe, like, as long as we can keep these tariffs in place, eventually American industry would be able to kind of catch up. And even that, we might be able to, aside from the fact that we would have to pay people a lot more, do it just as well.
Yeah, one of the big things that will help with not having to pay as many people. Well, like it'll make us more competitive against China is automation and robotics.
And
Those two things are pretty much
yeah,
essential.
we have plenty of land to build on. We have plenty of infrastructure. Now, I have heard, and I do think they are kind of right. I was listening to this one guy talk about how, like, the march of history is towards globalism, and deindustrialization. And, like, you're not going to make America the 1910s workshop of the world ever again. That's just not how things work. And I think he does have a bit of a point in that, like, we're not going to bring back Model T assembly lines. We're not going to bring back these, like, part of it is just America's workforce has changed. But I do think it would make sense to say factories themselves and manufacturing is not just going to disappear. You always, even in a totally automated factory, you still need people working there. Like, I think it was kind of dumb for us to just decide the arc of history is going towards deindustrialization, and therefore we can outsource all of our industry to other countries.
A really interesting stat is everything. I think it was since the end of World War II, the amount that the United States produces has stayed relatively the same, but the amount of manufacturing jobs has gone way down. And that's just because it correlates with a huge increase in productivity. But and you know that you might be like, well, that doesn't make any sense because we're not selling everything to all these other countries and we're not self-sufficient
Just
anymore.
consumption has went up.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's a lot richer than they were back then, and we're buying a lot more.
Which I don't know if it's exactly the traditionally American way to just say, well, is the problem we're consuming too much?
Yeah.
But maybe there's going to be some corrections as, like, I don't know. After iPhones, like, plastic goods is the biggest thing that comes from China. And a lot of those plastic goods aren't entirely necessary. Though the electronic equipment kind of is. We're going to need to find something to replace that pretty quickly.
Right. And that we're building chip manufactories, which I guess they come from Taiwan, not mainland China, but we're building those in Arizona right now. And I think Apple, which would be the biggest tech company, said that they're investing $500 billion in Texas. We don't know what they're going to manufacture
Seriously?
there.
Oh,
Yeah, I
wow.
think so. I'll have
You
to
know,
double check that, but
I was looking at it today. Apple is, like, by far the largest company in the Dow Jones. It's like most of the other companies are around or below $500 trillion, and they're like $2.5 trillion.
yeah, Apple is a huge company. It's the second biggest company in the world right now, next to Microsoft, when you look at market cap.
Wow. I'm amazed that Microsoft is still that high.
I know, me too. It was like ages ago when it was such a huge thing and everyone bought its stock and all that kind of stuff, but they're still relevant.
Maybe it's all from the Minecraft movie.
Yeah.
They do own Mojang now.
Oh no. Yeah. Oh man. I'm gonna be completely honest. This is off topic, but I haven't seen the Minecraft movie. I've heard it's terrible, but it's full of meme-worthy material.
Okay, a friend of mine found a version of the Minecraft movie that was like some strange pirated edition,
Oh
right?
no.
And it was watchable, except all of the textures were like not fully rendered in, like it was from a version before the movie was ready to produce. And ju there's just like obvious green screen everywhere. It was probably the one of the funniest things I've ever seen, just because you have like these A-list actors and like all of this like bright, highly produced stuff, and then the most abysmal animation ever.
Oh
It's
man.
it, it was it's a decent movie aside from that. It's not like good.
Would you say it's worth its $300 billion box office?
That's insane. $300 million.
I think it was million. Yeah, 300 million,
Yeah.
not 300 billion. My bad.
It's the biggest I think it's the biggest video game movie ever. It beat out Super Mario Bros.
Yeah. And Super Mario Bros. Was a good movie.
Yeah. Probably better than Minecraft.
Yeah,
Maybe
probably.
part of it's just inflation, part of it's what is it? That weird trend where everyone's watching it ironically.
Yeah, and have you seen those videos of people who like buy a whole bunch of concessions and bring like
Throw
20
it all in
friends?
the
Yeah.
air. Hey, that's stimulating the market.
I mean, movie theaters aren't happy, but Mojang
I mean,
certainly
that movie theaters are happy that at least people are coming to the theaters now. Like, I don't think there's anything good on. So maybe this is just the lifeline they needed.
That's a fair point. Yeah, maybe. Maybe we'll see a lot more video game movies in the future.
The worst thing about it, and this isn't an original thought, but just like, yeah, there's going to be a lot of video game movies in the future. If they make this much money, we're going to see like a Roblox movie.
Oh
Know, a GTA movie.
no. I would not recommend going to that movie if they make that.
It's just the entire Fast and Furious cast. They didn't even.
Yeah. You know, if it was a Fast and Furious cast, that might actually be worth watching at some point. But outside of that, I wouldn't recommend it.
And then you just have a 90-year-old Harrison Ford because you can't avoid that for some reason.
For real, I don't know. He'll be like 110 and they'll wheel him into some movie sometime. Moving on slightly, still on the slight topic of economics. So we've talked about tariffs. Let's talk about the inflation report because it's very good news unless you look at it with a uh-oh lens. So inflation came in at 2.4%, which is below what economists were expecting. They expected it to be at 2.6%. The uh-oh part is it was negative if you look at month over month. So from February to March, no, sorry, from March to the beginning of April, inflation dropped by 0.1%.
Nice.
And yeah, you could say nice, but it's also a slightly, it's kind of like a warning because if you remember back in like 2022, I think it was when we had
Oh,
9%.
it could have dropped a lot more.
No, I'll get to my point in a second here, but in 2022, we had 9% inflation, right? And we thought that was hard to control. Well, deflation, which is what we're experiencing right now, is significantly harder to control. And you might think, oh, you know, lower prices, what, it doesn't really matter. Well, the problem is lower prices, the prices only get lower because people get fired. they don't have jobs, they don't have incomes, it's not explosive anymore. So something you're going to want to watch is watch the unemployment rate. If the unemployment rate goes up while inflation continues to be negative, we're in a huge problem, and you're probably going to want to watch that. But
True.
yeah, it's a problem that China, believe it or not, deals with all the time.
Well, I was actually reading an article today where it was like looking into what Chinese exporters thought about the tariffs. And some of them aren't that worried because they're like, my business, which is crazy. It's a communist nation, but they're still very business oriented. My business is only exporting 10% to the US, so I'll just not export to the US anymore and I'll be fine. And other people were talking about how, no, I'm gonna lose my job. Everything I have goes to the US and things are tough right now. Which it is bad for them, but I think China relies more on exporting to the US than we rely on exporting to them. That's the whole problem. So I think they will quickly feel the pain on this.
Yeah, they're working on economic deals to try to replace the United States as their market, but they're gonna feel a lot of pain. And Xi Jinping is probably gonna lose popularity within his party for this, which is good.
I mean, who's going to buy their iPhones? Are you going
Exactly.
to have India buy the iPhones? There's a lot of people in India hopping up and down, ready to spend $1,000 on the newest model.
That might be a couple hundred years away before that happens.
Just like the US is a huge market, 330 million people, probably 340 now.
Yeah, and not all of us, but 50% of us are actually literally jumping up and down whenever Apple releases their new iPhone that totally isn't the same as the last one. I don't see any country replacing us in the future, but it could happen. Let's see here. So China's tariffs are a little bit interesting. They're continuously retaliating, which I think is funny because what do they import from us beyond a little bit of soybeans and oil? But they're trying to get rid of our imported oil anyway, so.
Which is such a sad thing to see. Like, I saw this one chart showing all the ports in California. What do they import and what do they export? And it's like imports, cars, electronics, like finished metals, prefabricated like machinery. What do they export? Waste paper, recycled products, like junk, soybeans. It's like all the most low value stuff.
Yeah, for real. And a lot of those precious metals we could probably get from here too, but that's another topic for another day. This tariff war, it's going to be interesting. If this 90-day pause on tariff gets extended again and again and again, like he's been doing with the Mexico Canadian tariffs, then what we're going to see is a booming American economy, a decoupling from China, and we're probably going to be ready at the end of this 4 years to take them on if we need to.
And I think if we're going to assume that China will remain our rival and they're not going away anytime soon, I think it's a good step to take.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a theory I came up with. The European Union is right now in free trade talks with Australia. Australia is not going to join the EU. They don't have, actually, they might, if you twist the EU's constitution, they might be able to join because they're a Commonwealth of the UK.
United Kingdom.
Yeah. So what if the United States took Canada, Mexico, and basically anyone in the Western Hemisphere who's willing and was like, okay, free trade partners, right? And we'd sort of made a union similar to the European Union, but an American one.
Do we want that?
I think it might be more beneficial because we're entering an era where nations aren't nations of 300 million people. Like, I mean, even African nations that have 300 or 200 million people are joining, well, not joining together, but they have to work together in order to be competitive with diplomacy at the world stage. And the
I mean,
European Union is, yeah.
it would make sense if, like, the word is friendshoring. We friendshore our production from China to Canada and Mexico. And I think that was a little bit of what NAFTA was trying to achieve also, with free trade with our closest neighbors. So, I mean, yeah, I think that can work, though maybe we're trying to go even farther with these tariffs because we're including Canada and Mexico to say, no, we don't want to have automobile factories on 1 mile away from the border. We want to have everything in here.
Yeah, it could backfire. But then what I'm thinking, I guess this is probably like 50 years away before this becomes feasible, but you could then have like a free so with the what makes the European Union so unique is not its trade deals. It's something a little bit different. So the European Union has the free movement of goods, money, services, and people across any member state. And sometimes you can include other states, but yeah, that would be an interesting proposal for some American allies that are on the Western Hemisphere.
That really would be. I mean, it does sound crazy, but it would be an amazing thing if it could actually be made to work. I think if we're going to have free movement between the US and Mexico, we'd need to first sort out the border situation.
Right.
But yeah, I think even just kind of creating a new deal for the hemisphere, that trying to get more unity with all the Western Hemisphere, maybe have Marco Rubio do some diplomacy with South America. That would be cool.
Yeah, and Marco Rubio is insane at his job, so I would definitely Trump. I trust him to do that. That was kind of my crazy idea for the day, but
I
to
mean,
talk,
yeah.
go ahead. Yeah.
Well, maybe you're thinking the same thing. Just speaking of South America or just farther south, there's a recent case with this guy that was deported to one of these prisons in El Salvador, a guy named Abrego Garcia, which I think he came from El Salvador about 6 years ago. And, he's living in the US under a work permit, and the Trump administration had him caught up with all the people that were being deported on planes because he was allegedly part of MS-13. Now, it was later found that not only was he probably not part of MS-13, but there was also like a court order that said you can't deport this guy to El Salvador. This is exactly the place that he doesn't want to go back to. And the Trump administration basically said, you know what, you may be right, but it's too late now. He's in El Salvador. He's under a different jurisdiction. And that didn't really hold up under the court, which is understandable to just say, like, oh, it's too hard. It's too late. You can't do it. So he's probably coming back. All that to say, like, I think it is a valid thing to pump the brakes on. But a lot of people were kind of upset that this one district court guy basically shut down a major foreign policy related operation of sending suspected terrorists and cartel members out of the country. So a bill was just passed in the House and is likely to pass the Senate to kind of rein in the power judges have. With stopping nationwide things.
Yeah, that looks like a promising bill.
It's called NORA. I don't know what it stands for.
Let me see. Oh no, I had it. Oh no. No, I still have it. Here it is. Where is it? No
No
rogue
Ru
rulings.
Rulings Act.
Yeah, that one.
All right. Yeah, and it was brought forward by Daryl Issa of California. And if I could
California.
just read how he argues for it, there is a major malfunction of judicial activism in our federal courts. Practically every week, another federal judge issues yet another nationwide injunction in yet another gambit to stop President Trump from exercising his constitutional powers, carrying out the policies he promised the American people he would make a reality. This isn't even close to a legal disagreement involving standing, statute, or precedent. It is the Trump resistance in robes. The No Rogue Rulings Act is the comprehensive solution that we need to stop these abuses and ensure proper and appropriate balance in our federal courts.
Yeah, that I like his argument quite a bit. It doesn't make sense for a dude stationed in one tiny district to decide what the entire country can do.
And it is very much a partisan thing too. I heard something about how, like, kind of obviously, 85%, it was something like that, of all of these injunctions against the current administration are coming from judges that were instated by Democrats, which may
Yeah.
be a big surprise, but just to like really state, this is partisan.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's not every, like, if you look back at every single administration, the Reagan administration had a lot of injunctions against it, but they were kind of all over the place. And even Clinton's, the ones against Clinton, which there weren't very many, even those ones were kind of all over the place. It's kind of a recent thing where we're seeing with Trump and Biden that most of their injunctions are just Republicans or Democrats.
And I'm kind of torn about this in the sense that I think this is a very good bill, but just for the example, and I think it is a fringe example, but for this Abrego Garcia case, it would be pretty bad if it wasn't challenged by the courts because. On if it wasn't challenged, then you could have just like the government accuses you of being in some way related to a terrorist organization. They deport you to some Siberian labor camp or our equivalent, which is the El Salvador Gulag. And then even if it turns out later on you're innocent, it's too late. You're in El Salvador and we can't do anything about it.
Oops. Yeah, I really wish they tested that theory out on just some random protesters at like Columbia or something.
Yeah. Oops, we sent you to Syria. Sorry. I mean, Syria's a really dangerous place. We don't want to fly back there.
Pro-Hamas protesters out there, just send them
Yeah.
to Gaza
Yeah,
and
you
have
can
fun.
be the change you want to see in the world. You've solved the Gaza issue.
Right. This probably makes voters looks like we probably look so stupid to a lot of these politicians just because of the stupid things we do sometimes, like protesting for the Gaza Strip. I mean, if you want to go there and live there after this peace deal is done, be my guest.
Yeah. It is strange, especially since it is like in a pure scale, in terms of just the scale of the two, the war in Ukraine is five times larger, and the populations involved, the amount of people that have been killed.
Right. And you could kind of argue that Ukraine is actually an innocent side. Like, there's no reason that Russia invaded them other than the expansion of a defensive pact.
Yeah, Russia really doesn't have much of justification besides the standard imperialist justifications of like, we feel threatened, we have this ancient historical claim. Like, it's a very 19th century string of arguments.
Right. Yeah, I think we that's all of our main topics for the day. Is there anything we should add to this?
Well, just, I mean, in terms of the flood the zone strategy, I think the administration has still been successful because there really hasn't been a slow news day yet. Maybe we could have had a slow news day, but what with all the tariff stuff, it's just completely dominated. And there's been other things like, I mean, in terms of what the Democrats have been doing, they organized a ton of protests. And the protests got kind of drowned out by the tariff news. So I don't know. Maybe that's part of the administration's strategy. Your opponents can never really get a word in if you're always doing something.
Yeah. That makes me happy because I hate hearing from protesters and I hate having to see them on TV.
Mean, and I think part of their problem, and I was actually listening to a more leftist podcast, and they admitted this, a lot of the protests were super disorganized because they didn't know where to start. Like, they didn't have a single thing to zero in on as like, this is what we're mad about.
We're just mad that, we're just angry, okay? Some people just want to be angry for the sake of it.
I mean, hopefully next week we do see a stabilized stock market because people will be very justifiably angry if things go down as
Yeah.
dramatically as they did again, because that will cut through.
Yeah, that would we should update our predictions on that. Just because of how volatile it's been, where do you think it's gonna be at next?
What did I predict last time? I'm forgetting.
I don't remember. I think you said 40,000, I said 38 or something.
Which would mean that I was exactly right, but that's only because of things that happened very recently. You
Yeah.
would be exactly right if it wasn't for the turnaround.
We were both right for a little bit.
Today, I've heard it's called a crab day, in that like investors are uncertain. They weren't really. Like, a lot of them were kind of taking Friday off, so the market didn't change very much. It did go up a bit. I'm guessing by this time next week, it's still going to be at 40,000. I'm guessing we're going to see some big ups and some big downs, but altogether, the market's stagnant.
Okay, because bond markets still have not responded positively to the pause in tariffs, I'm gonna say it's gonna end at 38,000. I'm just gonna stick with my 38,000 prediction.
So we're saying it's going to happen again.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, on that note, don't take this for investing advice. We're just two people on a random podcast.
That are not economic.
No, we are not qualified to give you advice on your investing strategy. But anyways, have a great rest of your day, and I hope you have an amazing weekend as well. Adios, and God bless.